Here's what I need you to do. Whatever platform you're listening to this show on, go leave a rating and review of the show. Right now, leave a 5-star rating and review the show. Tell people what you think about it. Tell people the value you're getting. You take care of that business. I'm going to get into this episode, and I'll meet you in the middle. Let's do it. My senior year of college, I was not even on the basketball team. I was not injured. I was completely academically eligible. I ended up graduating with a degree in business that same senior year. Nothing wrong with my academics, nothing wrong with my body. I just was not on the basketball team.
Stay all day, doctor.
Work on your game.
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 Approaching the game aggressively, with that aggression, with that confidence to dominate a game.
Dre Baldwin, DreAllDay.com. Work on your game.
By now, you know about my book, Work On Your Game, Using the Pro Athlete Mindset to Dominate in Business, Sports, and Life. It is out in all stores now. If you want the audiobook of Work On Your Game completely for free, here's how to get it. Go to Amazon, look up Work On Your Game, leave a review, a 5-star rating, and a review of the book, Work On Your Game. If you haven't read the book yet, thus you don't know what to say about it, say something about my podcast, about something that you read, some way that I've helped your life and made you better or helped you make yourself better in any way. Leave the review. Take a screenshot of your review on your phone, computer, whatever. Send it to me. Email me, contact@DreAllDay.com. DM me, send me an at reply, send me a snap, however you want to get in touch. Make sure I get it. I will reply with a code for you to get the audio version of the book straight from Audible, completely for free. So you can hear the audio book 100%. Won't cost you anything. Just go leave a review of the book. You know my new book, Work On Your Game, is out. I've been talking about it all this time. Now you can get the audio for free. If you already got the digital or you already got the physical, now you've got a reason to review it. Go do it right now. Send me that review. You get the audio book while supplies last for free 99. Let's get to it. You are now tuned in to the show where you learn the discipline to show up day after day to do the work, the confidence to put yourself out there boldly and authentically, the mental toughness to continue showing up, doing the work, putting yourself out there. Even when the success you have expected to achieve, where is it? You can't find it because it hasn't yet shown up. And on top of all this, you get more than that. You get the personal initiative that moves you to make things happen instead of waiting for things to happen. We put all this together into one package. And what you get is the mindset, the method, the podcast, the brand, the website, the book called Work On Your Game. My name is Dre Baldwin, also known as Dre All Day. And today is the damn day. Today is the day. My book, Work On Your Game, Using a Pro Athlete Mindset to Dominate in Business, Sports, and Life. It is out. It is available. You've ordered it. If you pre-ordered it, you already have it. You already started reading it by the time you listen to this, or maybe you just tuned into the podcast first to see if I would talk about it because you know that you got it today. If you pre-ordered the physical book, you probably already received it, or you'll be receiving it via Amazon today. If you pre-ordered the digital book, you already started reading the digital book. And if you got the audio book, you already started listening to the audio book. Maybe you're listening to the audio instead of listening to this podcast right now. You're catching up on this later. Regardless, either way, you got the book. It is called Work On Your Game. It is about using a pro athlete's mindset to dominate in sports, business, and life. And I figured that since the book is coming out today, since there are some of you who've been listening to this podcast, maybe for a while don't quite know my story. Maybe some of you are listening to this podcast because you heard of the book, or you read the book, or you got the book, or maybe you're interested in the book, but you're not quite sure yet. You said, let me try out something that this guy has put out and let me see what he's about, see what he's talking about. Then maybe I'll be interested in the book. It all adds up to the topic that we're talking about here today, allowing me to reintroduce myself. I want to make sure all of you understand exactly who this person is coming to you through this book, Work On Your Game, through this podcast, Work On Your Game, through wherever you may have heard of me or followed me or read about me, whether you are looking to play overseas, you're looking for something on a mental game, somebody told you about the book, you follow me on Instagram, you stumbled into my email list, you came across my website, whatever it is. This episode right here, I'm going to explain to you exactly who I am, where I'm from, what I do, how it all came to be, and why this book is what it is. Is everything I'm going to talk about here in today's episode, it made this book what it is. It made me who I am, because I'm going to tell you my story. But it also made this book what it is. And if you have been subscribed to my email list or on my website, DreAllDay.com, or follow me anywhere online for the last couple of months, then you've probably seen the posts that I've been writing that go around this book. Basically, understanding a book can't encompass a person's entire life. I don't care how long the book is. It can't tell you everything that's happened in a person's life, every situation they've been through. Plus, whatever the topic of that book is, as this book, Working the Game, is not a memoir. It is not an autobiography. It's not me just telling my story. This is me taking the mindset things that I learned and teaching you how to apply them to your life, teaching that mental game to you. Now, of course, there are some stories in it, but there are a whole lot of other stories that didn't fit into the book simply because they weren't necessary for the topics that I'm discussing in the book, Working on Your Game. But I've been putting those stories out on my website, DreAllDay.com. So if you didn't know about that, go to DreAllDay.com and you can read those articles that are specifically about this book, Work on Your Game, but are not in the book, Work on Your Game. So if you haven't read those, go read those. There's been a lot of them that have been posted to this point. And today, in this episode, I'm going to reintroduce myself so I can tell you exactly who I am, where this book comes from, to the new listeners and the old listeners, people who may not be quite sure exactly where all of this and this person that you're listening to came from. Again, if you go to DreAllDay.com/about, the about page of my website, you can get a nice synopsis of me there as well. But I'm going to get into more detail here in today's episode. So let's get right into it. Point number one. I live in Miami, Florida, but I am not from Miami. I am from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Mount Airy to be exact, uptown. For those who are from Philly, you know that. That's where I was born and raised. I moved out of Philadelphia at age 24. So born and raised in Philly. My phone number is still Philly. I have family who is still in Philly, a bunch of friends who are still in Philly, and I still visit Philly as often as I can. Actually, as often as I wish to, not as often as I can. As often as I wish to. I like to go there when the weather's nice. I'm not really into the cold weather. At least not voluntarily. That's point number one. That's where I'm from, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And my background in sports, how I ended up playing basketball, is my first sports were baseball and football. Those are the sports that we played in the backyard. They say the backyard, but we didn't really have backyards where I'm from. I don't know where any of y'all are from. Where I'm from, we didn't have backyards. There was no grass, okay? We played on concrete. We called it the driveway. That's where we played, where we had to move out of the way anytime one of the adults from the block was driving their car through, coming home from work or going to the grocery store. We played in the driveway. So we played two-hand touch football. We played kickball. We played some forms of baseball, not with a real baseball and real wooden bats, because we would have been breaking all kinds of things all over the place. And on top of the stuff we were already breaking, using wiffle balls and kickballs and footballs and things like that. So my sports starting out were baseball and football. My favorite athlete back then was this guy named Deion Sanders, prime time, because he played football and baseball professionally. So I figured, all right, I could be like Deion and I could play football and baseball. The problem was, in football, I didn't have any equipment. My family couldn't really afford all the equipment that you needed to play football. You got all these pads that you got to have and helmets and all the stuff you need to play tackle football. I didn't have any of that stuff. And then when I played baseball, I realized I wasn't actually very good at baseball. And I've mentioned this many times here on the show, this struggling to be mediocre. You don't want to find yourself in that space. I found myself in that space. Luckily, I found myself there at an early age, early enough that I hadn't, quote unquote, wasted any of my life doing that thing, and finally moved on to basketball around age 14. And when I started playing basketball at age 14, I didn't have any help. My parents were not athletes. I have one sister, no brothers. She's not an athlete. There was no one in my family who was a basketball player, at least not that I knew of, and still to this day don't know of, who was at least older than me, who could teach me anything. There were no old heads in our neighborhood. That's what we called the older guys in our neighborhood. None of the old heads were taking me under their wing or trying to teach me how to play, because none of them had ever, you know, really gone anywhere with basketball. I mean, they were good in the neighborhood. They were the best players at the park, but they hadn't gone anywhere in sports as far as like playing in college or playing in the pros. These guys were guys who played in neighborhoods. They played in recreational leagues. Again, they were very good, but they weren't mentoring or teaching anybody. There were coaches in the neighborhood. There were about three or four coaches in the neighborhood at the local rec center where I would play all the time, but I played on the outside part. Inside where those coaches would be, there were way too many of us being players than there were coaches, meaning each coach could not give individual attention to every single young man or young woman who wanted to play basketball. They had to put their focus on a few who showed some promise from an early age, and I was definitely not a basketball player who showed any promise from an early age. All of that added up to the point that I didn't have anybody to teach me to play basketball. Nobody to show me, hey, this is how you practice. This is how you can work on your dribbling. This is how you need to shoot. This is how often you need to be doing it. I didn't have anybody showing me that. And some of you may feel you have that similar situation. Nobody to teach you. Nobody in your family playing. Nobody in your neighborhood who sees you as someone who has potential, quote unquote. So there's nobody really showing you the ropes of the game. Now, the difference for you from what the situation was for me, for you, at least now you can go on the internet, because and I'm going to get into this in a moment. You can go on the internet and you can watch videos of somebody showing you how to practice. You can get programs of someone telling you, hey, this is how you practice the game. This is how I did it. And I did something. I made it somewhere in basketball. You can just follow my programs. You can follow my instructions. You can listen to podcasts like this where somebody's telling you the game and the things that you need to do and things that maybe you want to add to your own skill set, mentally, physically, in whatever way, so you can be better. But in the 90s, when I was growing up, there was no, I mean, the internet did exist, but it wasn't ubiquitous. Everybody wasn't on the internet. Most people didn't even have a computer in their homes, let alone have access to the internet, let alone was there any content. We weren't calling it content back then because there was no content. So there wasn't anybody for me to go look up and learn from virtually, and there wasn't anybody for me to look up to and learn from directly. So no one to teach me basketball, but I wanted to play. I had already exhausted all my options when it came to sports. I wasn't really into tennis. There was no option for me for football because I didn't have equipment. I wasn't good at baseball. There was no swimming pools where I'm from. And again, I don't know where y'all are from, but where I'm from in Philadelphia, Mount Airy, there were a couple public swimming pools, but those weren't the kind of pools that you wanted to spend too much time in. All right? Those weren't the kind of pools where you would go underwater and open your eyes. Because first of all, there was too much chlorine in the pool. The whole thing smelled like bleach. Second of all, if you're from a place like where I'm from, you knew better than to open your eyes inside of one of those public swimming pools. There's all kind of stuff swimming around in that pool that you couldn't see, but you knew was there, if you understand what I'm saying. If you don't, Google it. But anyway, there was no other sport for me to play. I didn't know about any other sports. There was no soccer players where I'm from. There's no lacrosse. What other sports are there? I don't know. Those are the only sports we had. Basketball was the one that anybody could play because all you had to do was show up to the court wearing whatever you were wearing. You didn't even need your own basketball. For every 10 people, you only needed one basketball and you had a game going. So that was the sport that I ended up taking up. But again, nobody to teach me. So since I wanted to get better at it, I just had this wild idea. I thought to myself, why don't I just show up to the park more often than everybody else shows up to the park? Practice when nobody else is practicing. I'm still going to come to the park when everybody else is there so I can get that playing time in, that game experience that I needed to gain. Now, again, I didn't have all of this. I would not have been able to explain this to you at age 14, 16, even 17 that I needed to do these things. But this is just what I did as I deconstruct it now as an adult. This is what I did. Why not just come to the park in the daytime? I mean, 9 o'clock in the morning, 12 in the afternoon, 2 in the afternoon when it's blazing hot in the summertime. Nobody else wants to be outside because it's too hot. And I'll just practice then. I know I have the court to myself and I can kind of hopefully play catch up to all these other young men and young women who are better than me, because everybody was better than me at that point. So I just started doing this, coming to the court every day, practicing. And this was not just voila, I start practicing and all of a sudden I became this great basketball player like some damn Disney movie. It didn't happen that way. There are many for years. I'm not talking days, weeks, months, years. I'm practicing and I'm not really getting much of a result. I could feel myself getting a little bit better. Okay, I can dribble better now. I'm better at shooting from this spot. I can maybe do a move here and there. I start practicing making layups with my left hand, my non-dominant hand. I was getting a little bit better, but I didn't have any tangible results to show to anybody. I wasn't really making basketball teams. I was trying out for my team at my high school, not making it. And again, where I'm from in Philadelphia, at that time at least, there was no freshman basketball team. There was no junior varsity basketball team. There was one basketball team, and that was the varsity. And there was one coach. He didn't have any assistant coaches. That's just what it was back then at that time. So you either had made that team or you didn't play at all. And I didn't make that team. 3 years in a row, tried out for that basketball team, didn't make it. First day, got cut. Played on a couple local recreational league teams and had a little bit of success. I mean, at the local recreational league level, I made some shots in some games. I had a couple big games. There's a couple times where the other teams were looking at me like, yo, we got to stop that guy and stop that play that they keep running for this guy. So I had a little bit of success, just a little tiny bit of local, hyper-local success in basketball. I finally made the team my senior year of high school. And engineering and science, I went to George Washington Carver High School of Engineering and Science, or ENS for short. For those of you who are from Philly, may have heard of the school. Made the team my senior year, sat on the bench the whole year. Had a front row seat to all the games, right there at the end of the bench, watching all my teammates play in the games. And our team wasn't even that good. We were a mediocre team. We were just above 500 my senior year. I had nothing to do with whether we won or lost any of those games. I remember my season high that year was 4 points. I scored 2 baskets in a particular game. Actually, maybe I had 7, I think, one game. One game we had played, actually, I'm just thinking of this now. We had played in Northeast Philadelphia. It was like this after Christmas tournament. The game was like the day after Christmas. in Northeast Philadelphia, and several of my teammates who were from West and Southwest Philly, they were late getting to the game. Because this, if any of you who is from Philadelphia, or you just look at Philadelphia, the city, on a map, and you can see the geography of the city, to come from Southwest Philly to the Northeast section of Philly is like the two furthest away points of the whole city geographically. So a few of my teammates were late to that game. But luckily, me being from Mount Airy, I was actually close to Northeast Philadelphia, as close as anybody on the team. So I was on time for the game. So while four or five of my teammates, maybe five or six of my teammates, were late for the game, the coach started me that game. And I started, and I actually made a few shots and scored some points. So that was my season high that particular game. I don't even remember who we were playing. But once the players who usually played more got to the game, I didn't get back in the game. So anyway, I got my season high that game. So I think it was around 7 points, but don't hold me to that. Whatever it was, I got it in that particular game. Other than that, our last game of the season, we made the playoffs. I can't remember the team we played in the playoffs. It was a first-round playoff game. It was on the road, but it was a school that was really close to us. I can't remember if it was Benjamin Franklin or if it was George Washington. I'm thinking it was maybe George Washington High School we played, but it doesn't even matter because I didn't play in the game. I did not get in. We lost that playoff game. That was the end of our season. I remember walking to the subway that afternoon after the game. Because after the games ended, depending on where we played, the bus wouldn't take us back to our school. They would just let us, we would just walk out of the school and the coach would be like, all right, see y'all tomorrow at practice. We were on our own getting home from wherever the hell we happened to be when that game took place. So after that game, I'm walking to the train alongside all the fans who had been just watching that game, but none of them recognized me because I've been sitting on the bench the whole time. And I'm thinking to myself now, what the hell am I going to do? Basketball season was over. It was like early March, and we didn't get out of school till June. And I was planning on going to college, but I didn't know where I was going to go to college yet. So at that point, I'm figuring, all right, now I just need to start working on my game. I just need to start practicing, and hopefully I can get a situation where I can play in college. I had a pretty strong conviction that I was going to play in college, but I had no idea of the who. I knew the who, the what, when, where, why, and how I was going to do it. No idea whatsoever, but I just knew that I was going to play in college. Didn't even know what school I was going to go to. So I knew the only thing I needed to do at that point was just practice. I had a little bit more confidence that spring slash summer after my senior season of high school basketball had ended, simply because I had made the basketball team. I had finally gotten a tangible accomplishment from all my years of practicing. Started playing at age 14. By age 18, which I was my senior year of high school, I had finally made a basketball team that people could say, okay, congratulations, you made the team. You did something. All these young men try out for the basketball team in high school. You actually made the roster. Didn't play, didn't score any points, didn't do anything of impact, but you did make the roster. And that was an accomplishment for me. So I had some confidence because of that. I also had some confidence because one of my high school teammates, this guy named Darian Chavis, he was the best player on the team. He was my classmate in class during the day. So he and I got to be familiar with each other a little bit. I wouldn't even say we were friends. We were just familiar with each other because we were in class together all day, and he was the best player on the team. And I like to talk trash to him as if I was better than him, even though I wasn't doing anything compared to his 25 points a game, whatever he was doing. He went on to play D1 ball. And before practice every day, Darian and I would play this running game of one-on-one. And now Darian would win this game. He won this game overall. We didn't even keep score because every day before practice, we would just play a little bit. Then Coach Brown, our high school coach, was named Charles Brown. He would blow the whistle. We would start practice. Every day before practice, we would play a little bit more, then play a little bit more, and a little bit more. And overall, Darian definitely won this running one-on-one game that we played. But I would actually score on him sometimes. Sometimes he would try to score, and I would stop him. A couple of times I blocked the shot. A couple of times I did a move on him, and it worked. And I'm like, wait a minute, this guy's the best player. This guy's about to go D1. This guy has everything that any high school basketball player could want in the city of Philadelphia. He's one of the best 20 players in the whole city. And I'm actually competing with this guy. I wasn't beating him, but I was competing with him. And that gave me a little bit more confidence. Like, okay, I know I have the goods. And I don't know what to do with them. I don't know how to package them. I don't know how to put this all together to work in a 5-on-5 game when there are actually hundreds of people in the stands watching me, as opposed to this one-on-one game that nobody's watching and nobody cares whether I mess up or not. This no-pressure game, I was doing stuff, though. I can dribble. I can shoot. I can play some defense. I can grab a rebound. I can guard a guy who can actually play in a real game. Okay, so I know I had the goods. I had it in my mind now. I know I actually have it. Now, what the hell am I going to do with it? I don't know. How do I put this together and make it into something? I don't know. Unfortunately, I wasn't smart enough to go to Darian and ask him, hey, Darian, you're the best player on the team. You're an all-city player. You have all this live game experience that I don't have in addition to the skills. How do I put this all together to actually play good in the games? You know, I can play good in practice and I can play good when I'm practicing by myself. But Darian, tell me how I can put this together in a game. I wasn't wise enough back in, this was 1999. I graduated in the year 2000. I wasn't wise enough back then to ask that question. So those of you who are in my situation now, as far as your come up in sports or anything you do, you have an advantage over me in that you have someone like me, today's me, telling you these are the kind of questions you need to ask of people who are better than you. But nobody was telling me that back then. Nobody told me that. Nobody gave me that advice. Now, had this podcast been around back then, I would have been smart enough to glean this information and use it. But unfortunately, that didn't exist. But good thing for you is I went through that, so you don't have to. Hove did that, so hopefully you don't have to go through that. Okay, so now, Darian Chavis, I'm telling you about my teammate. He ended up going D1. I believe he was at Colorado State. I think he transferred to a school or two, but he went D1. I ended up going to Penn State Edmonton. This is the summer after, before I even get to college. I did go to Penn State Edmonton before. Let me backtrack in the story. The summer after my senior year of high school, graduated from high school, year 2000, ENS High School. Shout out to ENS. I went to this was actually before the school year ended, and into that summer, I found out there was a tryout for this basketball team playing in a particular league in Philadelphia. Any of you who's from the southern PA area, even that tri-state area of New Jersey and Delaware, you've heard of the league that I was trying out for a team in. It's called the Sunny Hill League. If you're not from the area and you're not into basketball, you may never have heard of the Sunny Hill League. But the Sunny Hill League is the best league. It was and still is the best league for young amateur basketball players in the southern Pennsylvania area. Just to give you some points of reference, Wilt Chamberlain, who played like in the 60s, maybe even before that, might have been in the 50s he was playing. Wilt Chamberlain played in the Sunny Hill League. Kobe Bryant played in the Sunny Hill League. Every young guy who's from the Philadelphia area who did something in basketball played in Sunny Hill. Rip Hamilton, who played for the Detroit Pistons, he played in the Sunny Hill League. I'm not sure Tim Thomas, who's from New Jersey, I'm not sure if he ever played in Sunny Hill, but I'm sure he was around the area. DeJuan Wagner played in the Sunny Hill League. Some of y'all know who he is if you're from that area. But every young guy who did something in basketball, Eddie Griffin, who got drafted, he was in my same high school class, got drafted by the New Jersey Nets. He tragically passed away a few years ago. But he was the number one player in the nation my senior year of high school. Not in Philly, but in the whole country. Eddie Griffin played in the Sunny Hill. Everybody played in that league. So when I heard there was a tryout for a team that was going to be in that league, I said, I'm going to that tryout. So I go to the tryout, right? And I did a whole video on this. If any of you wants to go on YouTube and look this up, the video is called The Best Basketball Team I Ever Played On. Just look up my name, Dre Baldwin, and type in Sunny Hill. S-O-N-N-Y Hill. And I did I don't even know how long that video was, but I explained this whole situation, but I'll explain it here now for everybody. I went to this tryout. It was at this gym called Augustine Lake. And Augustine Lake, if you're from Philly, you know about Augustine Lake. But back then, this is the year 2000, Augustine Lake was not what it is today. I drove past Augustine Lake last time I was in Philly. It was in the summer of 2017, and I saw they had redone the whole area. They had this big tennis center. They redid the gyms. It was really nice and updated and looked great. Back then, in the year 2000, Augustine Lake, there was a big concrete slab which doubled as a parking lot. It was the quote-unquote parking lot because there were no lines. You know how in the parking lot you got the lines for where you're supposed to park? There were no lines. All right? It was just a big slab of concrete, and there was one individual building, one solitary building in the middle of this concrete slab. That was the basketball gym. That was Augustine Lake at the time. Now, Augustine Lake's gym, I can't even tell you about the bathrooms because everything about that building was suspect. I don't think anything in the building worked other than the lights and the scoreboard. There's nothing else in the building but just a basketball court and a few rows of bleachers. So I go into this gym, Augustine Lake, for this Sunny Hill Basketball League tryout, this particular team. And when I walk in the gym, this is what I see. I see the whole Philadelphia All-City basketball roster. Because back then, just to give you some context, I'm giving you context and everything, everybody wasn't walking around with a cell phone, if you understand. We had beepers and pagers back then. If you had a beeper, that was a big deal. I remember when I got my first beeper in like 1998. That was the big deal then. We didn't have smartphones. You couldn't go on the internet. We weren't even talking about the internet like that. We had computers. We could go on the internet. It wasn't even a big deal back then. So anyway, we would read newspapers. This is how we got the information. If you want to know how many points one of your rival high school players scored the day before, you had to get the newspaper the next day. So we had games on Tuesday. You had to get the newspaper on Wednesday to see what everybody else did in their games. There was no other way of knowing unless you were at the game or you had somebody's phone number, you could call them and ask them. And they didn't even know because we didn't even have live stats. It's just crazy to even think about now how immediately we get information now. As soon as it happens, you know what happened. Back then, you had to wait till the next morning. Anyway, you would get the newspaper and you could see how everybody else did. You could look in the paper, see how many points you had if you weren't quite so sure. Unlike me, and I was scoring 4 points. I know how many points I had. But somebody like, let's say, Darian, who was scoring 25, maybe he didn't quite know. But anyway, we would get the newspaper. And then at the end of the year, every year, the newspaper would print the all-city team. They would pick the best players from amongst all the high school players who were the best. And I remember walking into this gym at Gustine Lake, flashing back to the present moment of the story. And there were maybe 20 to 25 players in the gym, besides me and a couple other guys who were coming in to try out that were the nobody guys. It was like three of us nobody guys. Everybody else in that gym was a somebody, a big time somebody. Almost all of them future D1 players who already had full ride scholarships to college by that point. We hadn't even graduated high school yet. They already had their scholarships and everything. There were about 25 of these guys, and all of them was a known entity. And I remember walking in there and saying, wow, all of these guys are like for real, solid, certified, good players. But I wasn't nervous. I wasn't scared. I was like, this is my opportunity. I'm thinking to myself, I played these one-on-ones against Darian every day. I sat the bench during the games, but I played these one-on-ones against him every day. If I could do something against him, I could do something against these guys. And now I got a chance to do it 5-on-5. Nobody knows me here. I'm walking in with a fresh slate. Nobody's expecting anything from me. There's no pressure on me whatsoever. Let's see what I can do. So I go in there and I start practicing with this team, and I was not one of the better players. Eddie Griffin, that number one player in the nation, he was in there. And Eddie was so good, they had a college player in there practicing with us who wasn't on the team, but he would practice with us just to guard Eddie Griffin because none of the high school players could guard Eddie Griffin. That's how good Eddie was back then. But anyway, I practiced with this team, and I'm holding my own. I was not one of the best players. I wasn't getting destroyed, but I was holding my own. I was looking like I belonged on the court with these guys. And that gave me another modicum of confidence that I could possibly do something in this basketball thing. So fast forward past Sunny Hill, we go through the whole summer after my senior year of high school, before my freshman year of college, I go to Penn State Abington, which is right outside of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. It's a commuter campus. They don't even have dorms on campus. No off-campus housing, nothing. You live at home when you go to Penn State Abington. I went to Abington for 1 year, played on the basketball team, walked on, played on the basketball team. I did okay that year. I performed better that year. I probably scored more points in one game than I scored my whole senior year of high school. Actually, not probably. I definitely scored more points in one game there than I did my whole senior year of high school at ENS. Played okay there. And then after that season ended at Penn State Abington, because at the time, Abington, which is now a Division III school, at the time, you could go there academically for 4 years. It was not a JUCO. It was part of the Penn State system. And everybody knows Penn State. You could go to school there for 4 years, but you were only allowed to play sports at Penn State Abington for 2 years at the time. So a lot of my teammates were second year athletes. And people were all different ages. When you go to these commuter campuses, like similar to a community college or something, you get people who are all different ages. So I had teammates who were, not all of my teammates were like between 18 and 21. I had teammates who were even older than that. But anyway, after that season ended, a bunch of them who were second year athletes, they knew that their athletic careers were over. They weren't trying to transfer anywhere. They weren't going on to a four-year school to play sports. They had played sports kind of as a diversion from their real thing, which is going to school, getting their degree so they could go on to their real world, quote, real world, close quote, lives that they were going to live. They did not have athletic ambitions like I had. So after that season ended, I would be in the gym. Penn State Abington had only one gym. I would be in the gym practicing, playing random games of pickup, one-on-one against whoever came in the gym. These are just random students who would come in the gym, and I'd just be playing random games against whoever at Penn State Abington. And there was this one guy, and I can't remember this guy's name, but I wish I did so I could give him credit. But he was from New York. He wasn't a basketball player, but he was a basketball fan. He was an enthusiast, so he would always be at our games. He would watch our games. He was from New York City. I don't remember what borough of New York, but he would always talk to me because he saw that I had talent. He saw that I was young and growing and I could get better. And he saw that I really cared about the game because I was always on the court practicing. The reason he would see me is because he was in the athletic building in the weight room. He would be in the weight room lifting. That's what his workout was. He never played, but he would lift. And he would see me. And after the season ended, he would come and pull me off the basketball court and say, look, man, you're not going to get any better playing pickup against these random guys on campus. These are random. I'm dunking on some fat white guy. And playing one-on-one, he's like, yo, look, it's cool that you dunked on him, but come on. Like, if you really want to go somewhere in ball, right? I can see that you do. This is what he would say to me. I can see that you want to go somewhere in basketball. but you're not going to get there doing this. And you know that, right? And I agree with him. Like, yeah, you're right. He was like, look, come in here with me and let me show you what you could do for yourself in here. And that was the weight room. He was the first guy who introduced me to the weight room. That was the first time in my life I had ever lifted weights when I started having this guy come and pull me in there and work out. And it would be like four or five other guys, black guys, older guys. These guys are probably like early to mid 20s who would be, they're students on campus, but they would always lift weights. They would always be in there every single day. So they took a liking to me because they saw I was a young guy and I had no experience whatsoever in the weight room. So they started showing me how to do stuff. I remember the first time they tried to have me do a bench press, 135 pounds. I could not bench 135 pounds. And then when I finally, they put some lower weight on it, I started benching and I wasn't breathing. I was like holding my breath, trying to push the thing. And I remember this guy who was standing there watching me. He was like, dude, breathe. Because I didn't know anything. Nobody had taught me anything about this. So those guys gave me my start in the weight room, which was a huge thing for me because it helped build up my body, of course. It helped make me a better player. It helped me get bigger, stronger, faster, more athletic, and able to more fully express my game on the court. It helped my game on the court a whole lot when I started lifting that summer. This is the summer of 2001 that this happened. And then that summer, I kept coming to the campus, Penn State Abington. I was not taking classes, actually. That summer, I worked at the movie theater during my freshman year of college. So while I'm on the basketball team, playing on the basketball team, taking a full course load of classes at Penn State Abington, I also had a job. I was working at a movie theater right outside of the Plymouth Meeting Mall. And this is 2000 to 2001, my freshman year of college. I've had some athletes ask me about this, like, if I need to work a job while I'm playing on the basketball team and going to school, I don't know if I can do them all. Well, I didn't have a question of if I could do them all. I had to do them all. I had to figure these things out. I had to make some money for myself in addition to going to school and playing on the basketball team. I even had the coach yell at me once because I had missed some practices because I had been at work, but I had to do what I had to do. So anyway, that summer, I wasn't working at the movies anymore. At this point, I was working at CVS. Summer of 2001, I'm working at CVS, not taking classes, but I would still go to the Abington campus every single morning because the basketball gym was wide open to anybody, any student. You know, if you're a college student, you got an ID, you can walk in there and use the facilities as much as you want. Nobody ever came in that gym. It was dead empty the whole summer of 2001. I went in there and practiced. If any of you ever been to Penn State Abington's gym, it's a beautiful gym. Six basketball courts. The floor is always squeaky clean and shiny. Nobody in there. I practiced in that gym by myself every single day, at least Monday through Friday, in the summer of 2001. And one particular day, this is what happened. Because I would eat breakfast usually at home, then I would drive up to Abington's campus, about 20 minutes from Mount Airy, and work on my game. Then I would go home, take a quick shower, I would make a quick pit stop at Wendy's and get like $5 worth of food off the dollar value menu. It's the kind of way that I ate when I was 19. And I didn't know anything about nutrition, but it did help build up my body, my growing body, because I'm lifting weights at the same time. Then I would go to my job at CVS at night. That was my routine that whole summer. But one particular day, my routine was broken because I had not eaten breakfast at home before driving up to the Abington campus. So instead of going straight to the basketball court, I parked my car next to the gym and I walk across campus to the cafeteria. I walk in the cafeteria, get myself something to eat. I start walking out and this guy approaches me and he says to me, he didn't say, this is how he approached me. He said, hey, man, what position do you play? Now, I'm looking at this guy kind of strange because I'm like, first of all, I don't know this dude. I've never seen him before. Penn State Abington is not a very big campus, so I know who everybody is and what they look like. I had never seen this guy for the whole year I've been there, so I know he wasn't from around there. And number two, he's asking me what position I play. Like, he's talking sports, but mind you, we're in the cafeteria. It's not like I'm on the court working on my game and he asked me what position you play. He's just asking a random dude in the cafeteria, what position do you play? Now, granted, I had on basketball gear, but at the same time, I wasn't like carrying a ball or nothing like that. So I'm looking at this dude. This is all going through my mind. I'm like, who the hell is this dude? And why the hell is he asking me this random ass question out of the blue? And I don't even know him. So I asked him, I was like, why are you even assuming that I play anything? And he was like, oh, I'm just asking. So I told him, I said, I play guard. And he says, oh, cool. And he starts talking. And as he's talking, he hands me his business card. And on his business card, it says that he works at Penn State Altoona, which is a different campus of Penn State. It's the only other campus besides Penn State's main campus that it was not a two-year athletic school at the time. At the time, you could only play at every other Penn State campus for 2 years. Then you had to stop playing sports. You either transfer, but you couldn't play sports anymore. Altoona was the only one besides the main campus, which is D1. Altoona was D3 at the time. It was the only D3 campus in the Penn State system then. Now a bunch of them are. But he hands me the car. He's at Penn State Altoona. And I'm like, yo, you at Altoona. Altoona's a D3, right? He was like, yeah. But then his whole conversation was really about academics. That's really what he was talking about. He was like, what do you major in? And he made it an academic conversation. But on his business card, it said, yeah, I work in the admissions office, but I'm also head basketball coach. That's the only part I cared about. Him on his card said he was the head basketball coach. I'm like, yo, the basketball coach? But again, I'm still confused. I'm like, how the hell does this dude even know who I am? Did he know I was going to be here? There's no way he could have known I was going to walk through the cafeteria because I never walked through there. It's the summertime. I'm not taking classes. This was just random happenstance that this happened. So it turns out, long story short, this guy was the basketball coach at Altoona. He did recruit me to come to Altoona. Within 1 week, I was transferred from Penn State Abington to Penn State Altoona. That was my first time ever in my life being recruited to play basketball. First time ever someone had come to me and said, I want you to be on my team because of your ability to play this game. Now, mind you, this is only 5 years after I had first started playing and 1 year removed from sitting at the end of the bench on my high school basketball team. Now, as I've told you the story, how it happened, I randomly walked into the cafeteria, a random dude who was on the campus maybe one day all year out of the whole year, who didn't even work there, happened to see me, approached me randomly. I don't know how he even knew that I played basketball, asked me about that, and ended up recruiting me. You may consider that to be luck. You may consider that to be happenstance. You may say, damn, things just broke right for you on that particular day. In many ways, you would be correct. But I want to point out some things to you. First of all, actually one thing to you. First of all, I was on the campus working on my game by myself on my own volition, voluntarily, every single day that summer. It wasn't like I showed up to the campus one day and ran into this dude one day. I was on that campus every day in the summer of 2001, working on my game, practicing my dribble, working on doing different dunks, working on different shots, lifting weights, hurting my back, trying to squat because I didn't know how to squat properly. And there was no YouTube for me to look up the directions. There's nobody else in there to show me. I was in that gym and in that weight room every day, practicing, getting better, doing whatever I could figure to try to get better. Because again, there's no guides, there's no tips, there's no help, there's no Instagram for me to follow somebody else's workout. I just had to figure it out on my own or try stuff on my own until I figure stuff out. And I happened to run into him while I was in the process of putting that work in. The discipline of showing up day after day after day to do the work. That's how I got lucky. They say that luck happens when preparation meets opportunity. He was the opportunity. I did the preparation. That's how I got lucky. That right there, me meeting this man, his name is Kenny Macklin. He was the coach of Penn State Altoona. He's the person who recruited me to Altoona. I would definitely have to say the turning point. That was the tipping point for me as a basketball player. Because had I not gone to Altoona, there are a lot of things that happened after that that would not have happened. Many of my closest friends in life are people that I met at Penn State Altoona. The person who knew more about playing overseas than anybody that I had ever met, who kind of seeded the information in my mind that I used the little bit that I got from that person and moved on to figure it out on my own and got to the point that I write books about playing basketball overseas. His name is Wes Pfeiffer. You've heard him on this podcast two times already. I met him at Penn State Altoona through another, I guess you could say, stroke of luck and how he ended up at Penn State Altoona. And you can hear his story from him. But that was the turning point for me, getting recruited, showing up every day doing work, first of all, getting recruited in what you could say was a stroke of luck, and then all the people that I met there, which led to everything that happened after. So that right there in the summer of 2001 was really a huge point for me. Ended up going to Penn State Altoona, but my college career did not. It was not the yellow brick road from that point forward. Here's what happened once I got to Penn State Altoona. This is my sophomore year, so I got recruited after my freshman year. My sophomore year at Altoona, our team was not very good. And when the season ended, our coach, Kenny Macklin, got replaced by a new coach. The whatever was going on with him and Kenny Macklin and the athletic staff, they ended up replacing Kenny Macklin with this guy who played in the NBA. His name is Armin Gilliam. Now, Armin Gilliam was a former NBA player. That was his claim to fame, and that was really the reason why they hired him. He didn't have coaching experience at all at any level. He just had this long NBA career that made him a name, and I guess that's why they hired the guy. So anyway, Armin Gilliam comes in to coach. We had about 9 guys from our previous year's team. So this is my junior year we're talking now. My junior year of college, we got a new coach, Armin Gilliam. We had 9 players from my sophomore year team, from Kenny Macklin's last team, who were eligible to keep playing college basketball, still had years left to play. But Armin Gilliam comes in, as any new coach does. They want to clean house. They want to get rid of some of the old players because, look, if these old players were so good, then I wouldn't even be here, the new coach is thinking, because they wouldn't have fired the old guy. So Armin Gilliam comes in and he just starts getting rid of previous year players. Only 3 of us, me and 2 other guys, survived the house cleaning that Armin Gilliam performed on the basketball program. So we had three returning players my junior year. Everybody else was a player who had not been on the team the year before. And me and Armagilliam did not get along too well for myriad reasons. The main one being we just didn't have enough personnel for everybody to kind of play the way that they wanted to play. He wanted me to play a certain way. I didn't want to play that way. I ended up getting kicked off the team because he's the coach and he had the power. Me as a college basketball player had zero power whatsoever. I lost that power struggle very easily. I ended my college career not on the basketball team. My senior year of college, I was not even on the basketball team. I was not injured. I was completely academically eligible. I ended up graduating with a degree in business that same senior year. Nothing wrong with my academics, nothing wrong with my body. I just was not on the basketball team. And this is after getting recruited to come to this school. I'm not even on the team. So it didn't really look too good for me. Just like when I first started, it didn't look like I'd ever become anything. When I made the high school team and sat on the bench, they said, okay, well, you're not going to play in college. I made the team in college, and then I got recruited. Unbelievable. And then I wasn't even on the team anymore. I graduated from college with a degree, hadn't even been on the basketball team. I don't know what this guy's going to become, somebody would have said looking at me, but it probably ain't going to have anything to do with basketball. He wasn't even on the team at a D3 school, really? I wanted to go pro. I wanted to go pro. I wanted to play overseas professional basketball. Problem was, I didn't know where to begin, where to go, who to talk to, what to do, how to do it, or where to do it. I had very little information. So my first year out of college, I worked a couple of, quote, regular, unquote, jobs. I worked at Foot Locker was my first job. I worked at Bally Total Fitness. That was my second job. Those encompassed a year. So I graduated summer 2004. So now we're in the summer of 2005, 23 years old, have a college degree, worked at Foot Locker and Bally Total Fitness my first year out of school. I still wanted to do this basketball thing. I heard that there was an exposure camp going on. You don't know what an exposure camp is? It is a job fair for athletes. Instead of sitting around talking, you actually get on the court and play. And the evaluators who are watching you in the stands, those are the people who have the power to give you a career. They had the power to change your life, the power to offer you a contract, the power to put in a good word, the power to make right call to the right person who can sign you to a contract and get you into the job that you want to be in, which is playing professional basketball somewhere on the globe. I went to that exposure camp, played pretty well at that camp. That camp produced a scouting report. Scouting report, if you follow me on Instagram, you've probably seen that scouting report because I posted it before. That scouting report, along with the scouting report, there was a video. There was footage of me playing at this camp, which is really what I needed. I needed a resume. In sports, your resume is not, here's where I played and here are my stats. Your resume is a video proving that you played there and proving that you put up those numbers. I had footage of myself playing at this exposure camp. That footage is what I sent out to every single agent who I could find in the United States who had a phone number. Every agent who had a website and or a phone number somewhere listed and a name, I called them. Any agent who responded, I sent a copy of my game footage, my resume. I sent them that resume. Of the 10 to 15 agents who I sent that resume, one agent followed up after he got the video who was actually interested in representing me. Other 14, I guess they weren't interested. Maybe I had the wrong address. Maybe they never watched it. Maybe they said this guy's garbage. There's no way he's going to make it. One guy was interested. That guy became my first agent. That guy is the guy who got my career started. He got me signed in Kaunas, Lithuania. That's where I began my career in the fall of 2005. So from age 18, sitting at the end of the bench, my high school team, not even getting in the game, my last game, 5 years later, I was in Kaunas, Lithuania as a professional basketball player. That was my first foray into professional basketball. From there, I played for a few other teams. In between, let me tell you a little bit more about the basketball thing. I played for a few other teams over the next year. I played for a traveling team in the States. I played some time in Mexico. Then I was back home again. Now, in between those, even, I had worked some regular jobs. I worked an overnight job at a supermarket. I ended up getting a job at Philadelphia Sports Clubs, which is a corporate-run gym in the Society Hill section of Philadelphia. But let me backtrack a little bit. That game footage that I told you, that resume that was the key to me starting my career, that I sent out to all those agents, that game footage was on this device called a VHS tape. Some of you don't know what a VHS tape is, but it's a physical copy of footage, meaning the only way you could have seen that tape back then in 2005 is if I physically mailed you a copy. I couldn't send it to you on my phone. There was no link that I could send to you, none of that. But I was a pretty smart guy even at the age of 23, and I realized, you know what? I'm going to need a way to get this footage to people besides making physical copies of it over and over and over again. And this master copy, the master copy of this footage, this resume, I need to save this for the rest of my life because this right here is pure damn gold. This right here is going to be, I knew back then when I got that footage in the summer of 2005 that this footage right here, I'm going to be telling people about this, that this is when everything changed for me. When I went and played at this camp and played well and got this footage and made something of myself. So I need to put this somewhere that is going to be safe, that will never be destroyed. Anything that's in a physical form, unless you put in a safety deposit box or something, it could get destroyed. So I need to put this in a format where I knew it would always be around and I couldn't lose it or I couldn't get water damaged or burn up in a fire or anything like that. So it just so happened in the summer of 2005, I had heard that there was this new thing called digital video. You could put video on a computer. You could take a video off a VHS tape and somehow get it onto a computer and people who had a computer could watch the video. Now that sounds so simple and basic today, but back then that was a brand new thing. So I took this VHS footage and I went to this audio visual store that I had used to always pass when I was riding the bus to Plymouth Meeting Mall. I drove up to the audio visual store. Actually, I called them first. I said, hey, I have VHS tape. Can you get this into a digital format? And they said, yes, we can. Because I had a desktop computer at my parents' house at that time that had a CD drive. So I said, okay, all I got to do is get this on a CD. Can they get it from a VHS to a CD? I called and asked. They said, yes, we can do that. They charged me like $30, $50 to get it from a VHS to a CD. So boom, I go up there, take the tape up there, give me my tape back, and they gave me a CD. I took the CD, put it in my parents' desktop computer. This is a Hewlett Packard Pavilion computer. I took that footage off that CD, and I uploaded it digital format to this brand new website called YouTube.com. Now, at this point, begins a parallel career for me. The YouTube.com footage that I put up was just highlights from my performance at this exposure camp. Now, I want you to understand something. Even though I could lie and say that I foresaw all of this happening, I did not. I was not trying, when I put that footage up on YouTube, I was not trying to build a brand. I was not trying to become an influencer. I was not trying to market or promote myself. All I was doing was taking the footage off a VHS tape and putting it into a digital format so I didn't lose it. That's the only reason I put a video on YouTube in April of 2006. The only reason. I put it up there and I completely forgot about YouTube, didn't go back to the website for months, didn't care about it. I just wanted to know that that tape was somewhere safe, and it was. So I continue playing basketball. I continue working on my game. I continue trying to keep going in professional basketball. And one day I remember, you know what? I got that footage on YouTube. Let me go to that YouTube site and see if it's still there. Because mind you, at this time, YouTube is nothing. This is around the time, for those of you who don't remember this time, and even those of you who do, this is around the time when, this is like 2006 through 2010. Okay, so this is the time frame when if you made videos online for a living or you blogged for a living, you were a loser living in your mom's basement who needed to go get a real job. All right, that's the way people looked at bloggers and video makers back then. Blogging and making videos was a side thing that you did for fun. Now, it was a passion project. It was not something you did seriously for a living. Nobody took you seriously if that's what you did for a living. All right, you blog for a living. Okay, all right, when are you going to get a real job? All right, what do you do for real? All right, how do you make money? That's how people looked at it back then. So this YouTube thing, I didn't give two dams about at the time. I just had the video up there and I just knew that my VHS tape footage was safe. So I go back to this YouTube site probably around early 2007. And I was shocked by what I saw when I go back to the video. When I go back to the video, people had commented on the footage. Now, let me tell you why I was shocked by the comments. I wasn't shocked by what they were saying. I was shocked by the fact that the comments existed. Why was I shocked? Because nobody knows me. Dre Baldwin, who? I hadn't played anywhere at this point. I mean, I had played somewhere, but nowhere in the United States. The casual basketball fan had no idea who I was. I had never appeared on TV. I played at a Division III school, not even played my senior year. Nobody knew who I was. There was no social media at this time, no Facebook. I mean, Facebook was out, but at the time you had to be a college student. I wasn't in college anymore, so I didn't even have a Facebook account. There was Twitter didn't exist till 2008. Instagram didn't come till maybe 2010. So none of this stuff existed back then. So nobody was going online and typing in Dre Baldwin. Absolutely nobody, not even me. So when people are leaving comments, I'm like, how the hell did these people even find this video? When I looked at the comments, I realized something. So this is what the comments were saying. Yo, who do you play for? How often do you practice? Who taught you how to play? Can you do more drills on dribbling? Can you talk about vertical jump? Yo, can you help me work on my game? I didn't make the team in high school. Can you tell me some drills I can do so I can get better for next time? These people were not asking questions of Dre Baldwin. These people were asking questions of a person who looks like they know how to practice basketball because they needed to know how to practice basketball. I had that insight when I saw these comments, and I realized something. I said, you know what? I go to the gym every day already. I work on my game every day already, and I have a camera now. How about I just record everything I do every day I go to the gym and put it up on this YouTube site, and maybe it can help some other people. I'll just pay it forward. Nobody helped me when I was coming up, but since I'm already working out every day, it wouldn't take me hardly any extra time to just do this. And you know what? Besides working on my game, I didn't have that many other time commitments in my day. I could take 5-10 minutes a day, chop up, edit up this little video in a very, I was using Windows Movie Maker, edit up this video in a very amateur way and put it up on this YouTube site. And somebody else can learn from it. Why not? Why can't I help out the next generation? I could do that. Why not? I'm an altruistic guy. So I started doing it. I started recording myself working out every day, putting those videos up on YouTube every day. And people kept watching. People kept commenting. People kept asking me questions. And even then, though, my priority was playing basketball. Understand that my priority at that time, this is, again, 2005 to 2010 is the period I'm talking about now. I didn't give a damn about, again, there was no personal brand at that time. That didn't come around to the tail end of this period. There was no influencing. There was no any other phrase that we use. Social media, we weren't even using that phrase yet. Blogging and YouTubing, again, if you blogged or YouTube, you were a clown who needed to get a real job at the time. You needed to go take a shower and get out of the basement. That's who you were if that's what you did for a living back then. So I wasn't looking at this as a thing. All I was trying to do was go back overseas and play somewhere else and play somewhere else and play somewhere else. So at the time, my career is still gone, but it's up and down. So this is what's happening. This period of 2005 to 2010, things were not going perfectly smooth for me. I want to make it clear for you. Things were very up and down. You ever see those progress charts where it says, maybe it's a meme, where people say, people think success goes this way. And there's that chart that's going up and to the right, where the line is going up and to the right. As time goes on, you just get better and better and better every day. But what it's really like is just this up and down, looks like a ridiculously sharp roller coaster, right? Just going up and down. That's the way things were for me. I had had to have a come to Jesus moment with myself where I said, you know what? If things keep going the way that they're going, because I would have a playing job somewhere and then not have one, or I would think I was going to sign somewhere and then not sign somewhere. And then months would go by during the season and I'm unsigned. I had to get a regular job and then I would go play somewhere. Then I'd be right back in the same situation. It was just this cycle of uncertainty going on over and over again. Employed, unemployed, employed, unemployed. I think this is going to happen. It didn't happen. It did happen. And it might not happen. And it's going to happen again. This was happening too much. And I didn't like how things were going. And I realized that if everything keeps going the way that it is for the next 5-10 years, I have no control. I'm not going to have any power. I'm not going to like how things turn out. So I need to do something that puts me in a position of power, puts me in a position of control over my life, my destiny, my career. And that's when I realized, you know what? I had a website at the time. I started my website. I called it DreAllDay.com. I put that out in 2007. And I remember thinking of my website because it started to get a little bit of traction, mostly from people who knew me. But people were reading my blog posts. A bunch of people were watching these YouTube videos that I put out very sporadically. I just put them out whenever I got around to it. Some of my most popular videos to this very day that have hundreds of thousands of views sat on my computer for months because I just didn't bother to edit them because I'm like, who the hell cares if I put a video on YouTube or not? And some of these videos could have been out a year before they actually came out because I didn't give a damn. I didn't care. I didn't think it was a thing. But when I had this conversation with myself, I said, you know what? I got this website thing going on. I got this YouTube thing going on. I like being on a computer. I like kind of expressing my thoughts and my opinions. Can you tell? I like doing these things. How about I put a little bit more effort into this and maybe, just maybe, this could be something. Maybe this is what I have on my hands. Maybe it's not going to be so smooth and perfect as a professional basketball player, but maybe I could do something with this thing that I have here. I want y'all to understand that at the time, people weren't walking around calling themselves brands in 2008. Now, that was not a thing. Right, people weren't calling themselves influencers in 2008. That did not exist. All right, and you couldn't even make money from putting a video on YouTube in 2008. All right, Google bought YouTube probably a year later or maybe later that year. So then after Google buys YouTube, they introduced this thing called the partner program where you can actually have advertisements run on your videos. So believe it or not, ladies and gentlemen, there was a time when you could watch YouTube all day and you would not see a single advertisement. Yes, there was a time, the good old days. So I applied to this partner program. I said, all right, I'll do this partner program. I can actually make money from putting videos online. All right, that'd be a nice little job that I can do. That'd be a good way to start a business. I applied, put all the information in, cross the T's, dot the I's. I'm like, yeah, I'm about to start making money from making YouTube videos. YouTube rejected me. They said, no, you were rejected. And you know they don't give you a reason why you're rejected, but they tell you you can apply again in 60 days. So in this 60-day waiting period, the 60-day moratorium, I'm thinking to myself, what can I do to make sure Google/YouTube absolutely says yes next time I apply? Because I damn sure was going to apply again. What can I do to guarantee they say yes next time? This is what I did. I said, since I work out every day and I can record myself every day, why not get serious about this video thing and put a video out every day? And the reason why I wanted to put a video out every day was not just so I could be the guy who puts a video out every day. It was because when I did my application for YouTube, I wanted to be able, I understood salesmanship back then. I wanted to be able to say something about myself that nobody else could say. I knew if I put in my application, I put out a video every day, that would get some, whoever looked at my application, that would get their attention. They would say, yo, you know what? I don't think anybody else is doing this everyday thing. At least when it comes to basketball, we need to give this Dre Baldwin guy a shot. So I started putting out videos every day. This is during the 60-day moratorium after YouTube told me, no, we're not interested in having you make money from posting videos. I started putting out videos every day. Now, at first, I was kind of concerned. Do I have enough ideas to put out a video? I didn't want to be sure I could make it 30 days, let alone 3 years, let alone 7,000 videos. I wasn't sure I could make it. But I just started writing down every idea I had. Every time I went to the gym and did a drill, I said, you know what? I haven't put that one on YouTube yet. Let me do that one. Let me do this one. And let me do this one. Each idea led to another, and it led to another, and it led to another. I start putting these videos out every day. I applied for the YouTube partner program again. Boom, they said yes. I remember the first time I got a deposit from YouTube. It was for a little over $100. And it was the first time in my life that I had just created something from absolutely nothing and gotten paid for it. That was another turning point in my life. This is the 2009, 2010 time period. So now I have these videos on YouTube, still playing ball. Still trying to get signed, being signed and not being signed, you know, cycling through agents, still doing that. I'm making these videos on YouTube every day now, and people are liking it. My audience is growing. I wasn't even sure YouTube had subscribers yet at this point, but there are people who knew who I was. People were actually typing my name in, looking for me, passing my name around to friends and all of that at this time on YouTube. And one day, somebody leaves a comment. Even before the comment, actually, let me go back in the story. People would always come to me and ask, well, Dre, look, you practice every day. You're pretty good. You're playing pro basketball. I need your help. I want to play on my high school team. I want to try out for my college that I'm walking on to next year. I want to try to play overseas. I just want to play in my neighborhood and be good. Problem is, I don't know how to practice. I don't know what to do. I don't know where to begin. I don't even know how to practice. Can you make a program for me, Dre? Can you write down a program for me on how I can work on my own game and practice the way that you do? And I would always say no. I cannot do that for you simply because there were too many people asking me that same question. I didn't have the time or the bandwidth to put a program together for each individual player who wanted to learn how to play basketball. So I would just turn them down and say no. And I remember people would always come to me and they would say, Dre, can you give me some tips? Can you give me some help? Can you give me some advice on my game? And I used to get asked that question so many times that by early 2009, I was so tired of people asking me for tips and help and advice that I made this video. I was in a 24-hour fitness in Cutler Bay section of Miami. It was about 2 o'clock in the morning on like a Sunday morning. I just woke up middle of the night and went and worked on my game. I had my camera with me as always. And as I was stretching, I started talking to the camera. And I remember saying to the camera, all you players asking me for tips, help, and advice, here's what you need to do. You need to stop watching YouTube videos, even mine. Turn off your Xbox. Turn off your TV. Stop standing on the corner with your bum friends and go work on your fucking game. That was the first time I ever used the phrase work on your game or with the fucking in it. That's the first time I ever used that phrase. And I put that video out. That was January 2009. That was the birth of work on your game as you know it to this very day, 10 years ago. So now, later that year, a player comes to me with a comment. He says, Dre, since you practice every day, how about this? Why don't you just write down what you do? Why don't you just write down your own workout routine? Write down how you practice and then just put that out so everybody else out there can just practice how you practice. So at least now we have some kind of guide because you got all these videos and they're great, but we have no idea which one goes first. Which one do I do on Monday? Which one do I do on Tuesday? How do they work together? There's just so many videos. There's no way to make sense of it. So why don't you just write down what you do so we can follow that? And I say, you know what? That's a good idea. Now, at this time, I think I had just read maybe a year before, maybe that year. I just read this book called The 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss. And those of you who don't know Tim's backstory, just very quickly, he was running his own business, but the business was running him more than he was running it. It was running him into the ground. He was going crazy mentally. And he said, I'm going to have a nervous breakdown unless I do something differently. He went on this trip. He went and got a one-way ticket out of the country. And while on that trip, while he let the rest of his staff run his business, he came up with the ideas and plans that became the 4-hour work week, which was basically learning how to automate his business and remove himself from having to do everything in his business. Any of you solopreneurs probably understand that language, what I'm talking about right there. So anyway, what Tim had done in his book, he had made some points about if you're just trying to start a business and you want to find out if you actually have a viable product to sell before you go do all the work, here's how you can find out. You could run like $5 worth of ads on Google for whatever it is you're selling, have a landing page that you can start completely for free, just get some free cheap hosting, make a simple landing page about your product, and then put a button on the page that says, I want to buy this product. Put the price, had a button say, I want to buy. Now, anybody who clicks on that button, it'll take them to another page that says, these products are not quite ready yet, but put in your email address right here, and when they're ready, we'll email you. That was Tim Ferriss's advice in the 4-hour work week. And any of you who's thinking about starting a product, you need to rewind that and listen to what I just said. I remember him writing that in the book, and I did exactly that. So I went and got this free hosting page, and I put up this webpage that said, basketball training programs. You want to learn how to play basketball, learn how to dribble, learn how to shoot, learn how to dunk. I know how to do it. The program is going to be $5. If you want to buy it, click this button right here. Now, anybody who clicked that button, they would get a page that said, these programs are not yet ready, but as soon as they are, I'll email you and let you know. Put your email address in right here. I did that. I went on Google and purchased $5 worth of Google ads. $5 worth of Google ads. Mind you, this is back in 2009 when you could actually get traction for $5 worth of ads. You can't do that anymore. Might need $50 or $500 these days. But anyway, I put that ad up. I put that web page up. And what I remember Tim saying, if you get some email addresses, if you get people actually putting in their email address, you have a product. You have something that can sell because people who don't know you, who are just looking for what you're selling, actually put their email address in because they were willing to buy it for the price that you said, the product that you offered. Now go make your product. That's exactly what happened. I got some email addresses. I started making my product. My first products, I called them Hoop Handbook, Basketball, Simple to Advanced Ball Handling Program. First product I ever made. And I believe the second product was Shooting. I think those were the first two. $4.99 each. Those are the first two products ever, Hoop Handbook. Put them up. I put a video up on YouTube and said, look, all y'all been asking me for programs on how to practice. Here they are now. Go to this website and you can buy them. That's the day I became an entrepreneur. When I started putting those programs up on that website, hoophandbook.com, still exists to this very day. That's how I became an entrepreneur. That's how my brand started building. And that's how I got into pro basketball. All of those things happened at the exact same time. Now, basketball not always going smoothly. As I said, it led to me creating those products, starting work on your game. And then we jump ahead a few years in the story, 2014, 2015. That's around the time where I figured, you know what, I'm done with this basketball thing. I didn't want to play basketball every day anymore. Not because I was tired of the game. Not because I didn't love basketball and winning the games and competing and any of that. It was the work. The training required. Any of you who has played professional sports, you understand this. Any of you who is a fan of professional sports but have not played at that level, you may not quite understand, but I'm going to help you understand. The amount of training required for you to stay at the level, to be professional performance ready, is a full-time job. It's not a part-time job. You can't do two businesses at the same time. We're talking three workouts a day. And if you're an athlete, that means your body is your business. You can't do much in the time that you're not working out. You need to be resting your body so you can get back for the next workout and then get back to do the same thing over again the very next day. So it's a full-time job to be a professional athlete, even when you're an unemployed professional athlete. I knew I didn't want to do it anymore. I just did not want to work out three times a day anymore. I was looking at that third day. And I knew I didn't want to do it anymore. And as soon as you realize you don't want to do it anymore, that's when it's time to walk away. Problem many people have is they realize they don't want to do it anymore, but then they keep doing it. All right, then their results suffer. And then people are looking like, what the hell happened to this person? And that's covered in my book, Work on Your Game, when you read it, that came out today. But anyway, I knew I wanted to get out of doing basketball every single day. I wanted to create more products. I wanted to write, such as my book, Work on Your Game. I wanted to do professional speaking. I wanted to coach people, not coach athletes, but coach entrepreneurs, coach business people, coach professionals I wanted to consult. I wanted to do these things next. In 2016, year after that, I started podcasting, put 1,000 of them up in a row, as you know, probably if you're listening to this. And now today, and of course, we're fast forwarding through a lot of things, but a lot of these are covered in my book. Again, it's called Work on Your Game, The Pro Athlete Mindset to Dominate Sports, Business, and Life. Now we are here today. Fast forward to where we are here today. My book is out today, where you learn how to take the mentality of a professional athlete, the mentality that I needed, not only to become a professional athlete, but to remain a professional athlete. And the mentality that you need, not only to become a professional, fill in the blank at what you do, but to remain a professional at what you do. I've written books on how to become a professional basketball player. I'm qualified for this. I've done 1,000 episodes in a row right here on this podcast on how to get your mind in the right space to do what you need to do to perform at your highest level, get all the outcomes that you want to get, and stay at that highest level. I have the credibility for this. You've heard the story now, and there's a whole lot more to that story. If you've been reading my posts, you know there's a lot more to the story that I just told you for the last hour. There's a lot more to it that I've been telling you on my posts. There's a lot more to it that's covered in my book. There's a lot more that's going to be in my next book. So what you need to do is go to Amazon, go to Barnes & Noble, go to workonyourgame.net, go to wherever it is you get books, iBooks, Audible, if you like the audiobook, whatever you like, get the book, Work on Your Game, Using the Pro Athlete Mindset to Dominate in Sports, Business, and Life. And just so you know, if you leave a review, leave a 5-star review of the book on Amazon, take a screenshot of your review, send it to me any way you wish. Send it to me via email. My email is dre@dreallday.com. You can DM me on Instagram, send it to me on Snapchat, send me an at reply on Twitter, whatever way you wish. Send me that review. I will send you a code to get a free copy of the audiobook straight from Audible for my book, Work on Your Game, Pro Athlete Mindset to Dominate in Business, Sports, and Life. Make sure you do it today because supplies are limited and we run out of these download codes for the free audiobook. They're out and then you're just going to have to purchase the book. Poor you. Get that book. Get it today. You got the story. You got the expertise. You listen to the man right now. Work on your game. Dre all day. Since we don't have comments or live interaction here, I created a survey so I can learn more about my audience, your needs, your wants, your desires, and how I can best serve you moving forward. So please go to dreallday.com/survey and take the Work on Your Game podcast survey so I can learn more about those things that I just said and better tailor future content for you. I appreciate it. DreAllDay.com/survey. Take it now. As you know, my book, Work on Your Game, is coming out February 22nd. Would you like to see a video of me reading to you the introductory chapter of that book? How about learning how I would build my brand starting today? How about me explaining to you how I landed a major book publishing contract? What about the writing process for putting this book together with the publisher? And how about how the Work on Your Game podcast comes to be? Do you want to know exactly how we put this whole thing together? All of those that I just mentioned are bonuses that you get just for pre-ordering my book, Work on Your Game, which is coming out again February 22nd. Go to workonyourgame.net to see all the pre-order bonuses, pre-order that book, and get those bonuses for yourself. Again, that website, workonyourgame.net. I told you I was going to give you tons of value, right? Have I been doing that? I'm assuming that since you're still listening, I have. So please leave a review of the show on iTunes or Stitcher. Make sure you subscribe on your favorite platform and share these episodes. Share them on social media, on your website. Listen, just tell the person next to you to go get the Work on Your Game podcast. That helps this show get seen by more people so we can touch more lives, work on our games, and change lives. I appreciate you appreciating me, and I'll see you on tomorrow's show. Work on your game.